Hey there, it's Dane Reinhardt bringing you the President's Perspective, a conversation between current and future leaders of NAHU.
So, another President's Perspective podcast, and I appreciate people listening and being a part of this. One of the things that's very interesting to me right now is in a lot of states, we're at the beginning of sessions, both in Washington and in most of the state capitals. I think other than Mississippi, Virginia, and Kentucky, and New Jersey, those are all the off year elections. So, you know, in the other 46 states, I don't know what you've been doing, but I've had a bunch of phone calls and a bunch of Zoom calls actually with state legislative leadership about what's going on. And I think it's an interesting aspect of what we do as an association advocacy side, because we focus so much about what happens at the national level. And I want to talk to you some about kind of the preparation for CAP conference and some of those discussions. But also, I think it's important to remember that what we do at the state level can be equally important. And so I know you're in Oxford, Mississippi today, seeing your daughter. Hopefully you'll see my daughter too, who's also there. But what are you thinking about walking into February and knowing that, you know, kind of the gearing up of helping legislators know who we are and what we do is so important right now?
You're speaking to both state and federal? Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be more of an obvious emphasis on the federal side of things because of the new administration and the turnover in regulators and just the whole cabinet. So there's going to be thousands of people and dozens of key people that we're going to have to reacquaint ourselves with from a positioning perspective. And of course, the states is more grassroots. I think what we need to do on the state level inside of the NAHU tent is to be even more collaborative than we ever have been and sharing ideas of what's working and what's not, because they're definitely trying things. We know what's going on, the public option in Washington. We know that's being tested. So that's good knowledge to have as we move forward in other states. It's good to have that trial balloon so that we can, you know, be sharing what's working and what's not as it's rolled out into other states. It's really not terribly dissimilar from the legalization of marijuana and some of these other drugs that are coming in. A lot of these states were on the sidelines in the beginning and more are moving into it and looking at something that they weren't exploring at all. And the ones that are getting into it later are learning from the states that got in early. So that sort of thing on the state grassroots side will be effective. But from an NAHU perspective, I think we really have to be focused on getting meetings early ASAP. And that makes this Capitol conference so incredibly important to having active participation in it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, one of the things I think with our political leadership so at the edges, it's often hard to figure out what to talk to them about and how to really approach it. Today, I had the opportunity to meet with one of the Republican staffers in our state legislature about healthcare. And then later this afternoon, one of the Democratic leaders during the minority in North Carolina's legislature about kind of her agenda. Essentially, they really weren't that far apart, but also find like at the state level, there's this need to really almost do a level setting, which is you can pass whatever you want, but the second that you pass something that doesn't apply to self-funded health plans, then automatically you've just not impacted 50% of the people who have health care in the state of North Carolina or any state, frankly. And so then you start narrowing down on where the opportunities are. And one of the things that we've really been trying to say to our legislators, and I think it's a good thing to say to our members of Congress, which is, you know, the perspective that we bring to healthcare reform and the debates that happen in legislative bodies is the perspective of the people who are actually paying for healthcare, right? Almost every issue, what you've got is the providers on one side and you've got the carriers, the insurers on the other. But in reality, they're all looking for our clients' money. And so we're often sitting there at the table saying, Whoa, guys, this is a great idea, but have you considered the following?
Absolutely. And I saw it years ago, not too many years ago, when a group of us went and were talking to the IRS about consumer-driven healthcare plans. And I think it was the number two person in Treasury or somebody that was far up there, was under the notion that all employer health plans are 0-1-1. He had no idea that that was maybe closer to 60% of the plans. And so a lot of what they were doing was that there's no practical application of anything that they're doing. And we know this, but I think that's got to be our voice. And our voice is going to be lost on anybody that's on the fringe that's passionate about anything. So we just have to stay in the middle and talk to the people that are willing to listen in the middle and just be logical and sensible, which we are, and just discuss the realities of how markets work and the practical applications of what we know. And that that truly is the essence of our value to them and to our constituents, which are their constituents.
Probably, I said this in probably a half a dozen meetings so far. We're the fail-safe against unintended consequences. You think it's going to work like this, and what we can 9 times out of 10 tell you in advance why that would work if you only did this on top of it.
We should use that at CAP conference. Like, I really do. I think we're going to have a talking point. Why should we be listening? We're the fail-safe against unintended consequences. Because that statement leads to, well, what does that mean?
Right. It's like thinking about, we were talking earlier about the, before the call, about the COBRA subsidy idea, which worked 10 years ago. Now, is it the right solution? Maybe, maybe not. But we're also in a world where 10 years ago, we didn't have the marketplace. But it is important. And I think this is one of those areas where at least a couple of people that I've talked to about this issue before really kind of digging into it was the impression among, you know, my member of Congress is a high ranking Democrat on the appropriations side. And his was like, I don't understand why employers would be worried about the COBRA subsidy. I mean, the carriers are paying those bills. And it's like, no, that's not what happens. I got a client that's got 60 employees and they got somebody that goes out on COBRA and you're subsidizing it. Well, your perspective is it's a $100 premium. We're giving you a $100 tax credit. It's okay. But if that person's got $8,000 a month in bills, then their health insurance premiums are going to go up at renewal, which means you're really fundamentally causing that $12 an hour person's cost for coverage to go up at renewal because it didn't work. And so I think that's one of those areas where the little tweaks that I think we can help will make things more successful. It also brought to mind another part of that conversation recently was just how much more efficient the group market is than the individual market. I've heard a couple of people say to me, why do we still have employer market? We should just have everybody get individual policy. And it's like, how in the world would that work? You want 330 million people buying health insurance, which is frankly more expensive than the group market, which gives people great flexibility, great opportunity to leverage buying power, and frankly, better negotiating with the networks, the providers. We get so much efficiency out of the group market that it also becomes one of those things I sometimes feel like we really need to start with a list of explanations about what we do.
Well, then you got trickle-down effects. We were on a call with a vendor last week internally, our firm was, and somebody asked a really basic question, but it was like, oh yeah, because we're in the DC area. It's like, for DC HealthLink, do you do COBRA administration for an employer that chooses all the plans on HealthLink? And they're like, probably, but let me get back to you, which is sort of in line with what you're saying. Like, if we just said, okay, well, we're going to offer individual plans and they're going to be subject to COBRA potentially or other federal, you know, presumably ERISA and anything else that goes on, you've got all the other unintended consequences that come with that. And no one in HR wants to deal with that.
Because again, then what you've got is, if you've got 80 employees, you've got 80 different plans with 12 different networks. And honestly, now with the way that work from home may just make where people work from so much more difficult, I just think it's so important for people in Washington, whether they're a member of Congress, regulators at the federal level, and especially state legislators and state regulators, to understand that the real world happens on the other end of our phones. And I've said this again, a half a dozen legislators in the last week. When a health insurance premium goes up 10%, they don't call their legislator. They don't call their member of Congress. They don't call the insurance department. They don't call the carrier. They call us. We're hearing the reasons, what the concerns are. We know what's driving it. We're explaining to them. We're fixing it. And that frontline perspective solve so many problems as policy discussions are had. And I just think we really have such a place to do here, man. It's why it's so important that the advocacy aspect of what we bring as an association and really demonstrating that we truly are America's benefit specialist is critical to the debates that are happening.
Let me ask you a question. One thing that I've struggled with at Capitol Conference, and you know, I know our friend Dave Mordo is very close with one of his congressional leaders and has known them for a while. When there isn't that personal relationship there, which obviously in and of itself is huge and can be very advantageous to the NEHU and everything we do, when you run into that representative that's, you know, potentially new now, who's on the fringe, who doesn't have an open mind, do you have any suggestions to someone that's just like, yeah, well, that's stupid, or, you know, I'm only for single payer, or I want to abolish the employer system, whatever it is, some sort of like, it's this or that, it's black or white, there's no gray. Do you have a way that over the years you've been able to sort of walk somebody back, engage them, and have them sort of maybe look at it from a different perspective than they had before you walked into that room? Because I struggle with that.
So I've had that conversation a bunch of times, and there's really two types of things that happen. One of those is they think that we're just making bank off of every client. One of the things I had a great deal of success with in front of some relatively liberal members of Congress probably 5 or 6 years ago was getting a room full of people in our business to sit down and say, you know, Dane, when you got a 20 employee group that's buying health insurance, how much are you making a year from them? And I think that's one of those things where they think you're making $50,000 and you're part of the problem. And when they realize that you're making $1,000, $1,200 a month off of working with that group, and they're like,
a month?
How can you afford to do that?
No, but I mean, to your point, it's so much even less than that. 20 times 20 is, you know, it's probably $5,000 a year on a case like that. Not 12. I mean, it's really low.
But again, that's the point, is that when you're saying to them, hey, this is what we really make, then they're like, why are y'all doing it then? I mean, I've literally had a member of Congress say to people sitting in the room, well, how can you afford to do that? And it's like, well, because again, we're helping lots of people. But to your other main question, I've started that conversation by saying, tell me the model that you want us to follow. You think Medicare is an answer, but let's be honest. Every Medicare claim in America is processed by an insurance company. Every Medicaid claim in America is processed by an insurance company. You're not getting rid of insurance companies. You're just strengthening them. Innovation happens at the employer level because employers know their employees. They know their unique needs. And most employers offer health insurance not because they have to. I mean, I might have one client in 100 who is offering health insurance to their employees because they have to. The other 99 are doing it for very maternalistic reasons. They want to take care of their employees. It is to some degree that I want my employees to have coverage. I want them to view that as something I give them as an employee benefit, et cetera. But for a lot of them, particularly in those small groups, it's the practical reality that if, you know, Dane, who works out in the garage, is making 10 bucks an hour and he has something happen from a health perspective, and he's got a $25,000 medical bill, I'm paying that $25,000 medical bill. They might pay it back to me over 10 years, but I know I'm on the hook for it. And so by providing him coverage, I know that I'm ultimately taking care of him and I'm helping myself. The reality is employers want to find the best solution. And what we really need to do is listen to them instead of the cat fight between providers and the carriers. And it's interesting how those two approaches, particularly with relatively liberal and very liberal members of Congress, does change their perspective.
Well, by the time this is out, it'll be right around CAP conference. I'm looking forward to that whole discussion dialogue. It'll be our first virtual one, hopefully our last virtual only. But as I've said in other meetings before, this virtual nuance to everything has actually been good. Just having it at 100% isn't great.
No, and it's, I think it's hard for all of us. We're family. So many of us are close friends, and that time of getting together is important to us. But I do think we can do important work. One of the things that's been very clear to me as we've done some of these legislative meetings over the last few weeks, we're actually getting better attention by having these calls. We're getting people on the phone who can actually see what we're doing, and they're listening to us in a different way rather than just we're another group of constituents walking through their door talking about something. And I think that as long as we got the right message to give them, we're far more important than we let ourselves be. And I think that's a good perspective for us to bring.
Thanks for your time. Do look forward to seeing everyone virtually at Capitol Conference. Hopefully we'll have Kevin Trokey joining us sometime soon, and many other interesting guests who bring different perspectives to the conversation. Thanks, David, and have a good one.